You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and recorded from my apartment in Bromfontein Werf. Curveballs late last night mean we're not able to do a live show from the studio, but the show does go on. And on the show today, Nassim Nayar from Sasfin talking markets. There's a lot happening. Samantha Stain from Cannon Asset Management, why we buy the business and not the share. And Helena Conradi on their new China ETF. Some morning headlines from Business Day. Andrew Lapping to leave Alan Gray after two decades. And of CNBC, Tesla tops Toyota to become largest automaker by market value. Morning markets, US was green, S&P up 0.5%, NASDAQ up 1%, just off all-time highs. Asia following suit, Sydney up 1.5%, Tokyo up 0.1%. Commodities mixed, the main one, gold down at 1776 after being above 1800 earlier in the week. The Rand 1705, that after yesterday's 1735 yesterday morning, and top 40 opening call looking for a green opening about 0.6%.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Quick, Nesson Nayar, he from Sasfin Securities. Nesson, morning, appreciate your time. A bunch happening. We've got gold down at 1776, Rand at 1704. This as the ADP number. It was a miss, but it was still positive 2.5 million jobs in the US. If I crunch those numbers, we get to about 14 million Americans out of work, unemployment probably about 13%. But it seems risk back in vogue, even if just for today.
Yeah, good morning, Simon. Certainly in the last sort of 2 to 3 weeks, you got a sense that there was, even though the markets were tapering a little bit, you got a sense that there was definitely a risk appetite back on the table. And for me, I mean, just looking at the commodity prices, oil holding above $40 and looking like it's going to creep up now in the $42 level. I mean, that's a good level for the oil price. It shows that, you know, demand seems to be picking up. Even on the precious metal side, gold, you know, hitting 1800 this week. You know, I think a lot of gold bulls would be quite happy about that. But it seems like even copper as well, you know, I think a lot of people missed that one. But copper, you know, up to the 270 to 280 mark per pound, you know, showed a recovery as well. And of course, iron ore didn't really decline. I mean, it's in the 90s and the 100s. So for me, these stronger commodity prices are either a reflection of maybe an improved economic environment out there, or maybe people just happy to hold hard assets as opposed to, you know, currencies. Remember, all these things are measured against the dollar. And I'm just not sure, you know, investors have or entirely comfortable with the volume of money that's being printed and that is potentially going to be printed in the next 12 to 18 months.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I mean, not only have we, truthfully, let's be honest, it's the Federal Reserve. They've been running their printing presses at full speed. And, they're not taking the foot off that brake anytime soon. An announcement out of Sasol yesterday, selling Nigerian gas to liquid plant they had, as well as a JV, an explosives JV business venture. No price mentioned, but it is part of their proposed $2 billion in asset sales. I suppose we could say, you know, they're making some headway. Truthfully, the Lake Charles project and a sort of a minority partner there is the big story we're looking for. But they're plugging away at raising capital ultimately to pay down some debt.
Yeah, at least they're getting going with it. You know, it's an adjustment a lot of these big oil companies have to make to a much lower oil price. And, you know, Sasol got into this, remember, with a heavy, heavy debt load. Mm-hmm. You know, it was 200 billion rand at the time. And they got their hedging wrong, as, you know, one often does in these sort of circumstances. But they indicated that they would do some asset sales. to try help them, especially if non-core assets, to try to pay down some of their debt. And they'd look for a partner in Lake Charles. And it seems like, you know, they're getting going with that. Yeah, remember, INEOS is interested. I'm not sure what valuation they get. Remember, you know, you've got Lake Charles coming in at a capital cost of 13 billion odd plus accrued interest. That's, you know, that's the capital value that they're sitting on. And I don't think those valuations apply at a $40 oil price. But there's no rush for them. I mean, as long as they're able to meet their debt repayments, stay within their covenants, or get those covenants adjusted in the short term as a result of what's happened with the COVID-19, I think they plod along. They're also looking at cutting costs in terms of staff numbers. A lot of press coverage about that. We'll see how much they're able to cover in or cut in rand and cents terms. Certainly, you know, the business looks a lot better now, and so does the share price at $40 Brent price compared to $20 where we were a month and a bit ago.
That's a fair point. Yeah, at a point there, it was disastrous for them. Quickly before I let you go, we saw a Stadio update yesterday. Your take on the listed education space in South Africa coming into this pandemic, you know, there was lots of excitement around it. And certainly our private education as a percentage of students is low compared to global peers. But of course, lockdown and pandemic has really thrown spanners into it. Is it a space that you guys at SASFIN are interested in? Are you looking around, or is it just sort of red flags and caution?
So I think we tend to look at the bigger sort of tech players in this area. Remember, you know, there's a fair amount of innovation, especially regarding online education. In South Africa, the dynamic's a little bit different because, you know, obviously the publicly managed tertiary education institutions, you know, are at capacity, and very often, you know, the perception is that the quality of the education is not as good as some of the private institutions. And so I think that gives Stadio a unique niche to be able, you know, to provide a quality of service and an education that perhaps more and more students are looking for that can't get into the mainstream institutions. But globally, I think that's where the action is, you know. The ability of these online universities, you know, to be able to provide their material, their content online, to be able to examine online is becoming more, is enabling more and more people throughout the world, you know, to get a much better internationally recognized quality of education. And I think this lockdown now and the fact that people have to sit at home and, you know, operate from home just provides these institutions with the with more and more exposure to that market. You know, if you felt that you needed to wake up in the morning, go to university and sit in a lecture, you know, in the last 3 months, you realize you don't necessarily need to do that.
Yeah, absolutely don't. We'll leave it there. Nissen Naya from SASFIN Securities, really appreciate your time this morning.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
I'm chatting with Samantha Steyn. She's Chief Investment Officer at Cannon Asset Managers. Samantha, morning. Appreciate your time. Your latest note, which came out just yesterday, talking about buying a business, not the stock. And I think a lot of people aren't they the same. But what you're really focusing on here, you're saying, you know what, almost in a sense, I mean, the share price is going to do what the share price will do. What we need to really focus on as investors is what is the business that we're owning on, and what is that long-term potential for that business?
Exactly that, Simon. So, I mean, we're familiar with stay invested in the market. Often the saying goes, time in the market, not timing the market. And I think the same principles should apply when investing in businesses. You want to get invested in good businesses and stay invested.
Yeah, and that's very much it. It's the staying invested, and I appreciate that is sometimes hard to do. I mean, you give some examples. You know, Microsoft, which, you know, on a couple of occasions had sell-offs in excess of 50%, but yet since, you know, over its lifetime, it's returned over 18%, beating the Nasdaq, which did 11% annualized. It's saying, you know what, the prices are going to do some crazy stuff, but if we've got solid businesses, if we've made sure we've got the quality, Microsoft is it, we can ride through those sell-offs.
Exactly. And the hard work comes in identifying that are able to do just that. And with Microsoft, they've been able to evolve and transform themselves from a hardware business to more software and cloud-based business. And during its history as an investor, it may have been quite challenging holding it through periods of sell-offs. But if you look back at the history, I mean, the worst thing you could have done was actually sold these businesses at the low, whether that be the dot-com bubble in 2000 or the global financial crisis where you saw it down 60%, or more recently, even now with the pandemic, in the first quarter, the share was down 28%, but has since recovered fully. I think my article goes on to just remind investors to remain patient and not let their emotions get in the way of investing. And if the business case still stands and that business fundamentally is still sound, the best thing to do is actually nothing.
Yeah, and I appreciate it's easy for me and you in a, early Joburg Thursday morning to say that. Often, when markets are collapsing, it's tough. I mean, one of the things I've taught myself to do is sort of go back and revisit the company, ignore the share price, revisit it, make sure that, it is the company I like. It is the company that has great potential. Tricks that you've got whilst prices are collapsing, or you're just an old hand at this and you can almost turn off the market and ignore it.
No, I mean, it is difficult. We're all human, and behaviorally, it's challenging. We also try and assess the company's fundamentals and, similar to what you do, remind ourselves why we invested in this company, what is the investment case, and what is the value. And if all those things are still intact, we hold. But it is challenging, and I know for even asset managers in the country, we all fall for this. And it's hard when there's a pandemic and the headlines are all negative and everyone thinks we're going into a depression, not to get anxious and want to throw everything out. But I think if we stick to fundamentals and our core belief and stick to our principles of investing, then we should reap the rewards in the long term.
And in essence, avoiding fads, I suppose, because fads will come and go. Microsoft, yes, we're going to get Lightning Unix. We're going to get Apple, the coming back. And, but, it's not like a case that, I mean, there's not a future in my life where I don't see Microsoft in my life. There are other fads out there where they will come and go. And we need to find those solid and, dare I say, almost boring companies.
Yeah, I mean, so that's why specifically when I wrote this piece, I didn't really want to choose the companies that are being praised for, like you say, Apple, Facebooks, a lot of the tech giants at the moment are very popular. But I wanted to take it back to, as you call it, boring companies, your Microsofts, your Nestles, even these companies, if you were patient, steady, and held these businesses, I mean, they did really, really well. So we try and avoid the fads, and we try and look for solid businesses that are compounders, high quality, and aren't cyclical, but can be long-term investments.
Yeah, great point. Not cyclical. Last question, I suppose. These sell-offs, I mean, once we've learned to get over our sort of knee-jerk response to join the selling and we get comfortable with holding through them, they offer us opportunity. I mean, to your point, Microsoft was down 28% in the first quarter. That was actually a great buying space once we've got over our fear.
Exactly. And I mean, it sounds easy to say it in hindsight, buy low, sell high, but I mean, that's essentially what you want to do. You want to switch off all the market headlines and really just dig down into the business and the fundamentals. And if you can stay close to a handful of companies that you know really well, you would be less nervous when you see these sell-offs. I mean, you'd rather see it as opportunity as opposed to fear. And I think that just comes to understanding the business, the underlying drivers, and your investment case really well.
So I'm staying CIO at Cannon Asset Managers. Really appreciate your time. Love the concept. We are buying businesses, not stocks.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
I'm chatting with Helena Conradi. She's CEO at Satrix. They're, of course, are celebrating 20 years of ETFs on the JSE this year. And what they've announced earlier this week, currently under IPO, is a new ETF and tracking China. Helena, morning. Appreciate your time. China's one of our exciting economies out there, second largest in the world, one of the fastest growing. It's going to be a great addition as we can. It's Alibaba, it's JD.com, and a bunch of other stocks, which truthfully I've probably not even heard of before.
No, you're right, Simon. And yes, it's our 20th anniversary year. Not really how we thought it's going to turn out, but we're still fortunate to offer our clients more investment opportunities. And this one is really exciting. If you think of it, China has contributed about 33% to world GDP growth in 2019 versus the 14% of the US. Mm-hmm. And as you said, some analysts predict that it will be the largest economy in the next 5 to 7 years. Yeah. So that's huge, a huge opportunity.
And certainly, I mean, as a South African investor, I actually get outsized exposure via Naspers, but that's a single point of exposure. And I was digging around the other sort of global ETFs on our market. It's listed on the JSE. There's a little bit of China in there, but it's all sort of down in the sort of low single digits. This is going to be tracking the large cap, the mid cap China, if I recall correctly from the notes, around 85% exposure. This is going to be fundamentally different to the current exposure a JSE investor has been able to get so far.
Exactly. So the biggest exposure to China that you can get currently is through the MSCI Emerging Market Index, mm-hmm. and that's around 39%. But all the other country indices as low as 3%, 4%. So you're right. And if you look at this opportunity, I mean, it actually justifies a single ETF just tracking China. And that's why we decided, okay, no, that's an important opportunity, and we would like to give our investors sort of access to that. Also because over the last, I mean, historically, it's been quite a challenge to access China.
Yeah.
But regulations has been sort of revised over the last decade or so, making it much more accessible. And this is why you see now more China coming to the fore in terms of foreign investors as well.
Yeah, we had a Deutsche Bank at a China ETN, an exchange traded note. They shut it down in January. This is
That's
definitely
right.
our first ETF. You're going through BlackRock. You're coming in at a tour which a couple of people have raised their eyes at. And again, I stress, you know, we live in a lovely world where a total expense ratio at just over 0.6% is like, wow, that's a lot of total expense ratio. But I imagine China's a difficult market in some ways to invest into. This isn't, you know, a developed economy such as New York or Western Europe.
Absolutely. I think if you look at any index investment, talk about the 10 basis points, the percentage point in target sort of an annual TRs, that's your vanilla index when you go for very much your standard market indices. Mm-hmm. These are all a lot more niche index, and I still think that's an excellent TER to get access to the Chinese market. And it's a feeder fund, so you'll be investing in South African rand, but then get exposure to the market of China, the foreign market.
You're doing an IPO for this. This was the SENSE announcement that came after the close on Tuesday. IPO is open. When does the IPO close? What are the dates? When will the ETF be listing?
Yes, so the IPO started yesterday morning, and it's closing on the 14th of July. And then the listing date is estimated for the 22nd of July. So the benefit of an IPO is that you don't pay any brokerage or trading fee. And also you definitely confirm that you will be in there with the performance since inception. So it's a huge opportunity. And it's for 2 weeks because we see this as quite a big IPO. We've decided to make it a little bit longer than a week and give them everyone an opportunity to invest in this in the next 2 weeks.
So 22 July is listing later this month. IPO yes. Running until 14 July. People contact their stockbroker. They can go to the Satrix online platform, make application. And this is the process where we're not sure what that listing price is going to be. So they would say, I want to invest a ZAR amount because that listing price is going to be dependent on the currency and the sub indices, when you create those ETFs.
Yes, there's no way that we can say what would be the price the 22nd of July. I would love to know, but yeah, that will be your listing price. And the rand amount, you invest in rand, so mm-hmm. that also simplifies the whole process. You get foreign exposure, but you don't have to go through all the regulatory improvements to take your money out of the country. You can do it all from a rand perspective.
Yeah, that's one of the benefit. Yeah, that's one huge. Of the great benefits of buying offshore ETFs on the JSE is I get pure offshore exposure, but I don't have to jump through the hoops. It's not part of my offshore allowance. Last question: yes. Do we know what the code will be for the ETF when it lists?
We do know it's Satrix, so STXCHN. Mm-hmm.
STXCHN listing on the 22nd of July. Going to be the most direct way we can get exposure to China. I think it's going to be a huge addition to our market. We've got a lot in the sort of developed market space offshore. There is an emerging market as well, also from Satrix. Now we can get direct China exposure. Helena Conradi, CEO at Satrix, really appreciate your time this morning. That's it for today. You'll find us live every morning, 6:30 on moneyweb.co.za or the app and the podcast from 7 a.m. You can chat to us on social media. Use the hashtag MoneyWebNow. A massive thanks to my awesome team. Less than 12 hours ago, we learned we were unable to use the studio, but we still got a show out there. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWebNow. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.